The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. Good morning. Well, we'll see how this goes. Good evening. And last week I started a series of talks on Buddhist ethics. And as I was thinking about this evening's talk, I said, how could I continue with my series with this momentous day that we have, Martin Luther King and the inauguration of Obama? And then I thought, well, the two of them are, you know, for me, in my mind, can be closely connected. And begin with a story. It's an ancient Buddhist story. I don't know if it really happened, but it's said to have happened. Ananda was a monk, disciple of the Buddha, and he was wandering around the countryside. And he came to a village, and he was thirsty. And he walked up to a woman who was sitting at the edge of a well, or getting water from a well, and asked her if he could have some water. And she said to him, "Oh no, I can tell by your bearing that you are of noble birth. And the well for people like you is on the other side of the village. I'm an untouchable, and it would not be proper for you to receive water from me." And Ananda said in reply, "Any water you took from my hands would surely be a defilement for you and bring bad karma to me as well." "It is not so, sister," said Ananda. "Just as water does not discriminate by whom it is drunk or used, so too should the heart not discriminate between people of different backgrounds, races, customs, and social stations. These are mere conventions of our own human creation. They are not the Dharma. Please, let me have some water." As he said this, he held out a small coconut shell cup, and with trembling hands, the girl filled it with sparkling water. Ananda then sat and slowly drank the cup dry. The girl looked on joyfully, wide-eyed and with a racing heart, as if she were witnessing a miracle. For in a way, she was. Never in her life before, when around any people other than her family, had she ever been able to feel that she was just another person. The presence of untouchable hung in the air and cast a veil between her and the whole world. Now here was a holy man who, in these few moments, had brushed that veil so easily aside. She saw that she was right, and her heart was free from fear of any wrongdoing. This day, her life had changed forever. I was thinking today quite a bit about Martin Luther King. This morning, my whole family, my two little kids and I, we went on YouTube. And we pulled up some of Martin Luther King's speeches and sat and watched it. The "I Have a Dream" speech and other things. And I was thinking about him today, and I realized that once I became an adult, when I went off to college, that probably the three biggest influences on me in terms of my spiritual life or my life in many ways, kind of setting the course of my life, were was the Buddha, big ways, Mahatma Gandhi, and Martin Luther King. And many ways those three people have shaped me. in big ways and set the direction for my life. And it kind of struck me today, thinking about it, that you know, how much I owe to these people, and how in some ways they also were like people who showed me a cup of clear water and showed me a different way of being in the world than I had grown up knowing. In reflecting on this today, I thought about the so-called American experience. I guess everyone who lives in America has the American experience, by definition. But there are some American experiences that many people share. Some shared more than others. And so there's the immigrant experience. And for some people has been the land of promise, and some people has been the land of broken promises and or tremendous suffering. And so I'm an immigrant. I'm an immigrant to this country. Most people don't realize that. And I remember coming here as a... I came here actually a few times. Didn't get it right the first time. But I remember coming here as a young child and being teased for my given name. My name is not Gil. There's an E in front of the Gil, and that's pronounced Egil. And that name didn't work very well. It became Eagle, and everyone would laugh. So it became Gil, dropped the E. And maybe a small thing. Then they sent me to speech therapy class. So I would say mother and father instead of mutter. And fodder. And Martin Luther King gave a speech in 1963 when I was 7 years old. And then within a few years, when I was paying attention, he was shot. And I was so much aware of all the conflict that existed in America at that time when I was growing up. And another part of the American experience for some people is the police. And I've had, when I was young, when I was in high school, for example, the police were to be feared. I was afraid of the police. And I had, you know, good cause to be afraid, and I would be pulled over for no cause at all. I know there's people who get pulled over for seemingly no cause. The cause is, you know, they say that the cause is driving black. People get pulled over. It's American experience for some people. But I remember being pulled over and up against the wall and searched for no reason as far as I could tell, except that I was a hippie. And maybe that's something you do out of choice. I remember driving kind of as a hippie through cross country, through the southern parts of the country. And the people that I feared the most were white people. And it was quite something to go through some states and find myself in situations where I thought my life was in danger. Really intense feeling. Sometimes it was other people helped me get out of trouble. It's, you know, something to be. So that's an American experience for some people. When I was 17, I found myself driving through Oakland for the first time in my life. And then I was driving white. And black man didn't think I was driving fast enough and rammed me from behind. I didn't stop to find out why he did it. I left quickly. I've been in states in this country. I was in Hawaii. I lived in Hawaii for a while. And it was quite something in Hawaii to take college classes where I was the only white person. People here in this country, many people who are not white have experienced maybe being the only person, Asian person or black person. But in Hawaii, things were upside down that way. And I was the only white person. It was quite something to sit there in a class and not actively shun, not actually, there wasn't any hostility. Everyone was, you know, nice. But, you know, it felt like there was this huge, huge separation, huge, I was like an untouchable, what it felt like. And I knew it because when it was time to divide up into little discussion groups, guess who was left alone? Or sometimes I was left alone with the foreigners, the other foreigners, people from other countries who were there. So that was interesting to experience. Or to go to countries, you know, one of the things I've done growing up in my life, I lived in many places, many countries around the world. So some of this American experience that some people have is really a human experience. Going to school in Italy when I was 11 and being dismissed by the Catholic priest in school because I was not Catholic. Quite something. Never experienced religious kind of hostility before, but I was kind of just, it was a really ugly kind of dismissal when, as soon as he found out that I was Lutheran. I didn't know what that meant, but I knew I had been baptized as a Lutheran. And so I grew up, and America was at war, and I went to college. And at that time, probably some of you remember, there were enough college students in America who were being shot. Students in university I went to school with burned down the bank. It was kind of a very tense time, I remember. And war was really in the forefront because I was draftable. It was a draft time. And so the question is, you know, what would I do? So we would have these long, intense conversations in college about war and about the draft, what we would do if we got drafted and the various things. And as it was, I was the kind of extreme pacifist in the group whenever we had these conversations. So when you're at the far end of an argument, you have to kind of defend yourself the most, I guess. And so then I discovered the writings of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King. And I was so deeply inspired by them. I felt like they were showing me another way of being in the world, kind of another way that didn't live the divisions of us versus them. But somehow found a way to keep the heart open. I want to read you some of the words of Martin Luther King. He wrote, or said, in his Nobel Prize acceptance speech. Civilization and violence are antithetical concepts. Negroes of the United States, following the people of India, have demonstrated that nonviolence is not sterile passivity, but a powerful moral force which makes for social transformation. Sooner or later, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together in peace, and thereby transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of brotherhood and sisterhood, I hope. I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America and an audacious faith in the future of mankind. I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that the isness of man's present nature makes him morally incapable of reaching for the eternal oughtness that forever confronts him. I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him. I refuse to accept the idea that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. Martin Luther King also said, "In the most difficult moments, we can match your capacity to inflict suffering with our capacity to endure suffering." I'll tell you a story before I continue this. On retreat, or somewhere, I guess I was teaching a retreat many years ago, a woman came to me and told me her story of going down to the South during civil rights time to protest segregation. And she stood on a corner, she said, with another group of protesters holding a peaceful demonstration, and she described them as rednecks came along in a pickup truck, and they jumped out of the pickup truck and started beating up the protesters. And so they just sat there and were beat up. The next day they returned, stood in the same corner, and the same guys came by, jumped out of the car, and started beating them up again. The next day they went back on the same street corner and stood there again. And the same guys came by and jumped out of the pickup truck. And one of them, she said, was standing over her, his hand in a fist ready to hit her. And he looked into her eyes, and then he said, "What are you doing?" And there was no more fighting, and then they talked instead. Somehow, 3 days, 2 days of letting yourself, standing there nonviolently and letting, that takes a lot. We can match your capacity to inflict suffering with our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. We will not hate you, but we cannot in good conscience obey your unjust laws. However, we will soon wear you down with our capacity to suffer, and in winning our freedom, we will so appeal to your conscience that we will win your freedom in the process. So win your freedom in the process. The idea that we're all in it together. The idea that we learn from each other, the idea that how we behave to each other is consequential. One of the things that Buddhism teaches is that our actions are consequential. And to be responsible for how we act, what we do. And kind of a fundamental teaching of Buddhism is the teaching of karma, And the key aspect of karma is that our actions are consequential, that no action is inconsequential. And so to take responsibility for our actions and how we live is a key part of Buddhism. How we choose to live is how the Buddha wanted to evaluate or define a person. The Buddha said that you are not defined by how you're born. You're defined by what you do. Martin Luther King said, you are not judged by the quality of your skin or the color of your skin, but by the quality of your character. So this emphasis on character. And character is not just something abstract that you keep tucked away, you know, in the privacy of your own home or something. Character has to do with how we act, how we live our lives. In the San Mateo County Courthouse, they have this written on the wall by George Washington Carver. How far you go in life depends on your being tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, sympathetic with the striving, and tolerant of the weak and the strong. Because someday in life, you will have been all of these. So again, Martin Luther King. The ultimate measure of a person is not where he or she stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he or she stands at times of change and controversy. Martin Luther King, I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Never again can we afford to live with a narrow provincial outside agitator idea. Anyone who lives inside the United States can never be considered an outsider anywhere within its bounds. A network of mutuality. So, you know, I read these things when I was 20, 19, 20, 21, Martin Luther King and Gandhi. And it gave me tremendous sense of purpose, a tremendous sense that to somehow try to respond to the world, to the suffering that I saw around me. And and as I tried to find a way to respond, I slowly gravitated to Buddhism, to Buddhist practice. And there were a number of reasons for that. One reason was that as I considered my ability to respond to the issues of our times, the suffering, especially at a time when people are, you know, not so far away that I were being killed, standing up and protesting the war and things, I recognized that I was afraid. And I was afraid to put myself in danger. And I didn't feel good about being afraid. I felt like if I should live my values, I should not be afraid. And so I was looking for some way to deal with that fear. And somehow, in my young life, I followed my nose. And somehow I came to Buddhism, and because Buddhism offered a practice. And the practice is somehow would help me deal with the fears that I had, that I carried with me. So slowly then, over the years, the next couple of years, I got kind of pulled into the world of Buddhist practice. And it was very meaningful for me to confront these parts of myself that I didn't feel so good about, the places of limitations, of fear, various things that I carried with me. And it was often quite difficult to sit there and meditate, facing myself, being with myself, doing all these things. But I felt it was really crucial to do this kind of work. And at some point, after a few years of this, I felt it was time to bring it back, bring myself back, you know, somehow back into society. It kind of retreated from the world in those years. And I spent a lot of time considering how was I going to respond to the suffering? What was I going to do? And at some point it became clear that what was right for me. And that was, I was going to try to support other people to do Buddhist practice. It wasn't so much that I was attracted to Buddhism, per se. You know, I was attracted to Buddhism, but the Buddhism part wasn't that important. That was the only thing I knew that I had discovered that helped a human being deal with some of the deepest forms of suffering, the deepest forms of clinging, attachment, aversion, hate, that somehow is carried in the heart. And to somehow be able to go down there and address those deepest places of attachment, for me, was like the most crucial thing that I wanted to be involved in. And at the time, I didn't think of myself as being, that I would be a teacher, you know, do this being a teacher. I had this idea that I would have the keys to a meditation hall. And I would open up the hall and keep the bathroom clean and the rug vacuumed, and make it possible for people to come and sit and practice. But I decided that somehow I wanted that nothing else would satisfy me unless I could somehow try to meet or respond to suffering of the world where I thought was at the heart of it. And so my life then kind of went into more fully than into the world of Buddhism. But that remains sometimes maybe it's invisible here, because those of you who come regularly to IMC, I'm quite capable of giving a Dharma talk, giving a talk that goes on and on and on about maybe the details of meditation or introspection or something like that. And so it's not obvious that this is meant to address the ills of our society. But in my mind, this inner work is really crucial, because if people don't somehow deal with the barriers and boundaries and sufferings and hostilities that exist within ourselves, then I think it's very hard to be able to deal with it anywhere else. So this is one, like, I feel like this is like a Buddhism offers kind of like this amazing medicine that I hope is available to anybody who wants that medicine. And really my hope is that people take the medicine and then they turn around and they go out and somehow by who they are is medicine for the world. The idea of making an army of contented, peaceful people who just sit at home is not my idea of being a successful Buddhist teacher. I think that somehow being able to go out and respond to the world is really crucial. So I was watching these movies, speeches of Martin Luther King this morning, and then going through the YouTube kind of thing, up jumped a speech by Barack Obama. And it was kind of significant, the date in which he gave it, I felt. So they say that he got the nomination for the Democratic ticket on the day that Martin Luther King gave I Have a Dream speech. And he's being inaugurated the day after Martin Luther King Day. So this speech was given at, is it Ebenezer Church? Is that how you pronounce it? Where Martin Luther King was the pastor, on January 21st, 2008. So almost a year to a day before the election, before the inauguration. And I was really inspired. One of the contrasts I saw between Martin Luther King, seeing two speeches, because the speeches side by side, was, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't know enough about the history of civil rights and all that, but I saw Martin Luther King giving this amazing speech, courageous speech, steps of Lincoln Memorial, surrounded by men, and speaking about man and brotherhood. And he was a little bit before his time, for the time of feminism and a place for women, perhaps. And then I saw, this beautiful speech by Barack Obama in Martin Luther King's church. And he talked about some of the divisions and some of the separations that people have in our culture, in our society today, that people weren't speaking about so fully in 1963. So he talked about religious differences. He talked about gays and straight. He talked about people who are disabled and abled, I guess, and men and women. And I was really inspired to see that and see the continuation, the development, the momentum of this growth of our society and our culture and people who can stand up and speak so vocally and so powerfully about the need to be inclusive and to open our hearts to everyone. It is... certainly my hope that Buddhist practice, meditation practice, and mindfulness practice offers a really profound contribution to this world that we live in. If I didn't believe it was, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And we wouldn't have here IMC. I hope that this is a place that everyone who wants to come practice feels welcomed. And if they don't, I hope they let us know. Mahatma Gandhi wrote, "To come to the heart of truth, one must be able to love the meanest creature as oneself. And those who think that religion has nothing to do with politics do not know what religion really means." So I certainly feel that I was changed, just like the woman at the well was changed by Ananda. So I was changed by what I learned about Martin Luther King when I was a young man. And now I'm hoping that I'll be as much changed by our next president. I hope that I can allow myself to be changed, that I'm open to be changed. And And I'm struck by Barack Obama's call for volunteerism today. Oh, this is what I wanted to read. Did I not bring it down? It got lost in all the papers. Oh, someone sent me at Christmas time this beautiful quote by Gandhi. That, if I can paraphrase it now, You can shake the world. The world can be shaken by gently. Oh, I wish I could remember all of it. Anyway, the point being that each individual, I believe that each person can be amazingly effective. And I think that the word, the hope that Obama keeps emphasizing is also a hope that each of us can make a difference. And that no one should feel that they cannot make a difference. And I think this is also what the Buddha taught, that each person's actions is consequential. We can make a difference. But it really depends not on sitting around waiting for it to happen. But it requires some initiative on our part as well. So I hope that tomorrow is a meaningful day for you, an enjoyable day. It's one of the things I'm most proud about America is this holiday today. It's my favorite holiday in America. And so I hope that I've done I hope I've done an adequate job celebrating it, commemorating it. And so I wish you all well, and I hope you allow yourself to digest tomorrow in your heart. Thank you.